This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Many charitable organisations in Australia exist for the benefit of society, helping people who are usually disadvantaged in some way and who need help and assistance. And for this reason, many are eligible for various tax exemptions, including churches. Now, if the primary aim of a church is to advance their religion, then why are they still exempt from paying certain taxes? Dale Boccabella is an Associate Professor of Taxation Law at the University of New South Wales, joins us on the line. Dale, welcome to Drive.
Thanks, Warren.
How big is the not-for-profit sector in Australia?
Oh, look, I don't have that number off the top of my head, but it's pretty substantial. I think it's referred to as the third sector, in addition to the for-profit sector and the government. So, yeah, no, it's pretty big. It's pretty big, but no, I can't tell you the precise the component of GDP and all that sort of thing.
How much, though, do they help, I suppose, the government in looking after people? Because I imagine if they weren't there, then the government would have to pick up that.
Well, I think that's right. And look, I guess you can sort of trace back 300, 400 years ago, the local church, people just stayed in their areas, in their close proximity to their village. And churches, mainly churches, I guess, would provide what we know now as the welfare system or the safety net. So, yeah, I think your point is well made, and that is if they weren't there doing the incredible array of work that's done, there would be, the taxpayer. Yeah, that's essentially it. The taxpayer would have to pick up a bigger bill.
But there are not-for-profit organisations that, of course, aren't aligned with churches. Why are the churches also eligible for tax exemptions? Some of them have absolutely massive businesses and enterprises.
That's exactly right. Look, we're stuck with history here a little bit because the notion of charity, which is formulated, we're talking about the 1500s here. Mm. That's 400, 500 years ago. The idea of advancing religion, advancing education, relieving poverty, those sort of things, they were sort of entrenched in early England there. And we sort of stuck with it now, I think, there's this assumption that just like the relief of poverty, that promotion of religion and promotion of education is somehow beneficial to the broader society. And so we need to look after it, basically. We need to get barriers out of the way for doing it. Now, some people would sort of question it. I've seen commentators talk, more secular societies and that sort of thing. So you sort of do wonder that, we're sort of stuck in history here a little bit,
And I imagine, if you took a church, for example, and it's got some charitable component of it, you could understand why, I suppose, there's an exemption for that. But let's talk about some of the big churches that hold massive, big, ticketed concerts, for example. Why are they still considered, I suppose, a charitable organisation in its entirety?
Well, I think that's the real question. You've identified the problem here. I guess all I can really say is that this has been tested in the High Court, and the High Court turns around, and this is reflected in the Charities Act and the Tax Office ruling itself. What the High Court is basically saying is that, look, even if you're running a commercial enterprise, as long as you're essentially at the massive commercial enterprise, manufacturing breakfast cereal or something like that, and running conferences, as you said, as long as you're using that money directed to the charitable purpose or the religious purpose, in this case of a church, then that's okay. So, it's not incompatible running a mega profitable commercial business competing with the for-profit sector. As long as those funds are being channeled back for use, the profits are being channeled back for use in the religious aspect, it's okay. It ticks the box. Now, I've got a few problems with that. It's great to say that, okay, that's the rule and, et cetera, but one of the things which I think permeates our whole tax system, actually, is that enforcement of the rules. It's great to have a rule, and that sounds great, but you know, I just don't think, I question whether the Australian Taxation Office can actually, you know, check compliance that these monies are being funneled back into, you know, advancing religion, etc.
And I mean, I'm not, you know, a financial, chief financial officer of one of the major churches, but I would imagine that, you know, the income from a massive concert or a big commercial enterprise is a lot greater than funding, say, a soup kitchen in one of the suburbs. And the thing where I get confused is, why is advancing or promoting religion considered a charitable purpose? I can understand the soup kitchen and providing beds and helping people, but the advancement of religion, why can't that be separated out in tax law?
Well, look, again, I think, Warren, that's sort of just on that last point, I think it really does come back to that history point I made earlier, and that is that there seems to be something inherent about, or it seems to be accepted in society that, you know, advancing religion is a good thing. It's a public benefit. In fact, it's assumed it's of a public benefit. That's how strong it is. So I think we might be stuck in history there. If we were sitting here in 200 years' time having this conversation, maybe our society would be less focused on religion. I don't know. But I think we are stuck in, we're a product of our history to some extent.
We're chatting with Dale Boccabella, Associate Professor of Taxation Law at the University of New South Wales, about non-profit charitable organisation and their taxes. Dale, do you reckon, I mean, I suppose, you know, without putting a figure on it, do you think if we were taxing churches, it would have a big impact on the income that the ATO receives?
Look, again, no, I can't. Part of the reason I can't really be more precise on that question is because our annual tax expenditure statement, and that is annual tax expenditure statement, sort of quantifies how much lost revenue the government is getting because of exemptions and that sort of thing. Well, the problem in this area is that there's actually no item for this in the tax expenditure statement. So I can't quote you that number, so I can't really help you directly on that. But look, another thing too, I would make the point that no one's really raised the issue that if you take away the exemption and, just one of these mega churches, for example, that runs conferences and that sort of thing, if you take away the exemption, then you've got to ask yourself, well, how would the tax law apply? How would you actually measure the profits and all that sort of thing, the taxable profits? And so that throws another spanner in the works. So that's the reason why I can't be a bit more precise here, you know.
Do you reckon, there'd be a political appetite to look at that, or is it the 500? I suppose the 500 years of history is so entrenched that there's no one wants to touch it.
Warren, look, I actually think you're probably better placed than me to answer that because you're probably more an observer of society than me. But yeah, look, I think you're onto something there. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think there might be some resistance there, and you know, church ministers and people in heads of church, they carry a bit of weight when they talk, don't they, you know?
Definitely. What if you're an employee of a church? How are you taxed?
Well, I guess as a normal thing, an employee of a church is the same as an employee of a university like me. Mm. Just the normal tax rules apply, except we should qualify that, of course. There are some concessions built in for charities and all that sort of thing. So you might get some, because for a start, the charity itself or the trust or the institution, whatever you call it, gets quite a lot of, not just income tax exemptions, they get other exemptions as well, you know, some concessions on GST and state taxes. But in terms of employees, there are some concessions in the fringe benefits tax area. So there's actually a bit of an encouragement for these, let's call them charities, to provide some of the employee remuneration through fringe benefits, because the system, the fringe benefits tax system, it builds in some concessions. And look, part of that is sort of based on the idea that they say that charities have, it's harder to attract quality employees and we can't afford to pay them really high salaries like the for-profit sector. So the response of the government is, well, let's give them a little bit of a concession here in the fringe benefits tax area so that they can give some tax-free fringe benefits sort of thing. So there's a little bit of that that goes on. But the general comment on salary and wages, the amount of salary and wages you get employee receives is just taxed in the normal way.
Dale, you know what I love about this conversation? We've started it.
Yes, yes. Look, I've got some colleagues, one of my co-authors, who's doing research in this area. New Zealand people, some academics in New Zealand are doing some research in this area, raising some issues. But if you were going to say to me, you know, what's the key point you're making here? My answer to that would be the compliance area, because, you know, there's a reason why these exemptions are given. And it's the idea that the money's got to be used for the education purpose or the religious purpose, relief of poverty purpose, whatever it is. The ATO is a great revenue agency, one of the leading revenue agencies around the world, but it's got limited resources. That's the bottom line here. It can't do everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it can't check that Dale Boccabella is doing his tax return properly. It can't check that Warren's doing. It just can't do that. So, my concern would be whether the current law is actually being enforced. That's what I'd be starting with. And the broader debate that you mentioned before about, you know, what's the justification for the religious, exemption there? Well, that's something that needs to be questioned at the broader level, I think.
Dale, great to chat with you. Thanks for joining us on Drive.
Thanks, Warren. Thanks for having me.
Dale Boccabella, Associate Professor of Taxation Law at the University of New South Wales.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.